It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Jay Carlisle Larson in for Kate Archer Kent, and it's the State Capitol Report right now. State Superintendent of Public Instruction Jill Underley joins us. Teachers and students head back to school for in-person learning this fall amid a surge of COVID-19 cases due to the Delta variant, and we want to hear from you. Do you have a school-aged kid at home? Are they going to in-person learning? Are they sticking with virtual school? What precautions is your local school district taking against COVID-19 this fall? Do you think it's enough, or do you think it doesn't go far enough? Call 800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@wpr.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Superintendent Underley, welcome back to the morning show.
Hello? I can't hear you.
Superintendent Underley, can you hear me now?
I can hear you now. Thank you. Good morning.
There we go. Always that technology. It's always, you never know what's going to happen with it, but we've got people on it, working on it. So, Superintendent Underley, we're talking about returning to school amid COVID. Can you explain some of the measures that schools are taking to, you know, help stop spreading in classrooms, you know, mitigating all of that? Can you just maybe take a deep dive into that?
Yeah, absolutely. And just good morning. Happy Monday. Happy to be
here. Happy Monday.
It's my favorite time of year, back to school. You know, it's really interesting. I think school districts are coming into alignment, you know, as far as mitigation strategies that they're taking. You know, certainly learning that, you know, obviously we want to keep kids safe. We want a safe return to school. And so school districts are, you know, looking at masking. They're looking at vaccines for staff and students ages 12 and up if they haven't received them yet. They're also looking at ways to clean more. I know that last year, many of the successful school districts that were able to stay open had a combination of those mitigation factors.
So the State Department of Public Instruction and the State Department of Health Services recently sent out guidance for schools to help keep students and staff safe from the coronavirus. Can you talk about what was in some of that guidance?
Right. So, you know, in order to keep our schools open, and that's the primary thing, right? You know, face-to-face learning, keeping our kids, our students, and our staff safe, and by extension, our families safe, you know, and also trying to make things as normal as possible. A lot of the guidance addressed how to do that, how to keep our schools open. For example, practicing mitigation measures such as getting the vaccine if you're eligible, wearing a mask, practicing good hygiene, wearing masks on school buses, which is actually a federal requirement. So that's where it is. It's really just the best practices, you know, in order to prevent the spreads.
So mask wearing, potential vaccination, keeping these spaces clean for students and staff. Let's stick right now with masks, which have been pretty controversial, especially when it comes to schools. Some parents have been very vocal about, you know, opposing their kids wearing masks in school. And last week, a really large group of parents shut down a meeting of the Kenosha School Board. Let's take a quick listen to School Board Chair Yolanda Adams, who ended that meeting for capacity reasons.
We need to find a bigger venue, so I will adjourn the meeting and we will hold it on another day.
So we're hearing the tension happening between, you know, school board members and parents. But at the same time, you know, 500 pediatricians signed a letter urging school districts to adopt a mask mandate. You know, what is your response, Superintendent Underley, to what we're hearing from parents versus what we're hearing from pediatricians?
Right. So the pediatricians are spot on, right? You know, I'm frustrated also that people aren't following science. And, you know, when people feel like, well, I'm going to research this on my own or go against the medical profession, I mean, that to me is really kind of bonkers. You know, I'm frustrated. But, you know, public schools are supposed to serve all kids. And when there are no mask mandates, for example, our medically fragile kids, they no longer have access. And that's an issue. And if our job is to protect kids at our schools, you know, we have to make sure that they get the best education possible, and we have to have our schools open to do that. And the best way to do this is to have masks and get the vaccine if you can. And the other piece of this is that this will pass. I mean, it's a temporary inconvenience. I'm tired of masks too, but darn it, I'm going to wear one because it protects others. And it'll keep our hospitals from being overrun. It'll keep our schools open and our kids and our staff safe. And what I would say is that we need to protect the vulnerable kids and our staff. And again, this is going to pass. Our schools did not cause this pandemic. We have to deal with it with like everybody else. And the best way that we do that through the lens of protecting our kids and our staff is by wearing masks.
We are talking about back to school with the head of Wisconsin's Department of Public Instruction, that's State Superintendent Jill Underley, and you can join the conversation now at 800-642-1234. And I want to get back to the parents for a second. These parents that have been against a mask mandate, they say that it intrudes upon their children's freedom, that it's distracting for students. What do you say to those parents?
I know that there's a majority of parents who want a safe return to school and they support the mitigation measures. And I would say that for those who are the anti-masking, your kids are watching. You know, your fellow parents and your neighbors are watching, but understand that our school's number one responsibility is to care for and teach kids. And to do that, we need to have our schools open. And for us to have our schools open, we need mitigation measures such as masking. Kids wear face coverings all the time, you know, scarves, the health profession, they've worn masks for, in order to mitigate the spread of disease throughout their entire careers. It's a temporary inconvenience, but the long-term benefit is great.
You know, there are school districts in other states that are requiring teachers and staff to get vaccinated. Is that something that you would support in Wisconsin?
You know, I've really thought a lot about this. And the industries that are pushing this are higher education, tourism, travel, the bars and restaurants. And they're the industries that lost the most, quote unquote, business, so to speak, during COVID. And as for school districts and education, I know that anecdotally, teachers have a high vaccination rate. They want to be in schools. They want to be face-to-face with kids. They didn't like virtual learning either. Most teachers support vaccine mandates, anecdotally, because, again, COVID has been so disruptive. When you think about the shortage of teachers, you think about the shortage of bus drivers, the shortage of substitute teachers. And a vaccine is a mitigation strategy that ensures that not only are staff and students and families safe, but our schools can remain open for face-to-face. So if a school board or another industry feels that this is one of their mitigation strategies, then yes, they need to have a vaccine mandate.
Well, the decision comes down, as you said, school district to school district. You could look at one where they might say, we are requiring masks or requiring vaccinations, and they can make that decision. But then you might have another that doesn't implement any sort of mitigation measures at all. In your role, do you sometimes wish that your department could, implement a more uniform policy for schools in the state?
You know, I've thought about this too, and I think, you know, it just kind of comes down to this for me. It's going to pass. It's a temporary inconvenience. Our school districts need to protect the most vulnerable kids that we have in our, and that means masking everybody. Here's something I would just kind of leave people with is think about peanut allergies, which are unfortunately very common. And what have we done about that in our schools? I mean, we've become nut free, right? It's a no-brainer. So when I think about those who are anti-masking, I think if a kid had a peanut allergy and the school said, okay, we need to protect the vulnerable here, we're peanut free, are we going to get parents coming to our school board meetings throwing, you know, crowding them out because they have the right to eat peanuts or that candy bar? I mean, we have to protect the vulnerable kids and our staff. And in our state, we are a local control state. We want our school boards, who are locally elected, you know, for oversight, among other things, to make these decisions on their own.
We are talking to State Superintendent of Public Instruction Jill Underley right now on the State Capitol Report. A new school year is starting and much of in-person instruction is back during the pandemic. And we are taking your calls at 800-642-1234. I'm Jay Carlisle Larson. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's the State Capitol Report on the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Jay Carlisle Larson. Thanks for joining us this morning. State Superintendent of Public Instruction Jill Underlie joins us. We're talking about education, from school funding to the challenges of teaching amid the surge of COVID-19 cases, and you can join the conversation now. Are you a teacher? Do you work in a school? What are your thoughts about another year in education during the pandemic? How do you feel about schools requiring masks in classrooms? And if you are a teacher, would you support either a mask mandate or a vaccination mandate? Call in now, 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. Now, Superintendent Underlie on Friday, WPR reported that about 60% of Wisconsin's public schools and 13% of its private schools have opted into a free school-based COVID-19 testing program for students. Can you talk about that right now?
Yeah, I mean, testing is certainly one of those ways that you could disrupt learning loss, because what we learned last year, I mean, we're learning every day about this pandemic and the virus. But what would often be so disruptive is that you would have somebody who tested positive, and then we'd have to contact trace, and then before long, we were shutting down the school and having to go to virtual learning. So if you can opt into a testing program, to help with that contact tracing. So anybody who would be nearby, generally they would say, like, if you didn't have a mask on or if you were sitting, within several feet of somebody, you were a close contact, testing that person so that they can get the information right away if they have COVID or not. And we can keep our kids in school face to face, or if it's a staff member, keeping that teacher in front of the classroom.
Are these rapid tests that are happening basically at the schools themselves?
Yes. As far as I know that school districts partner with different medical providers throughout the state. So depending on where you are, and some schools we also have to recognize are not near, a medical provider. Some schools don't have school nurses. And so the testing may come to the school, but they may also have to outsource it too.
Rachel from Manitowoc called, but unfortunately couldn't stay with us. She says school practices extend beyond the walls of schools. She says that she and her husband are registered nurses, and that if her kids were to get sick, they wouldn't be able to take care of COVID patients. They wouldn't be able to work. What are your thoughts about kind of that interconnectedness between the schools, families, and the broader, work world?
No, that's an excellent point. We have a lot of kids who live with those who are first responders or medical professionals. And I encountered this last year as a superintendent when, a family, several kids got sick because of COVID. Their parents could not go to work and serve on the front lines in our hospitals and serving patients there. Or maybe they work with medically fragile individuals in the hospital, maybe on like an oncology floor. I mean, that really, we're all connected. And I think that's really the biggest picture here. I mean, we are all connected, and the caller was absolutely right. I mean, what happens at school impacts our families, which impacts our businesses, which impacts commerce, it impacts everything. We saw that, as things shut down, because schools, provide essential services to our communities. We saw a dip in workforce employment, especially among mothers. And I mean, we're going to have impacts and effects of this long term. And so I think, trying to do our part, remembering that we're all in this together. We're all tired of wearing masks. We're all tired of COVID. So let's do what we can to make sure that we kick this thing to the curb, and so that we can get back to functioning as normal as possible.
So I want to take a look at learning loss. It's something that happens, or we'll see it crop up in the summer. Some kids fall a little bit behind because there's a break. COVID-19 has really exacerbated that, and it's causing a lot of parents to be concerned that their kids are much further behind. Can you talk a little bit about learning loss and really where our state kids are at?
Sure. I'll just kind of preface this that I think we need to find a different word other than loss, because it is a deficit way of looking at things. I mean, learning happened. It did not happen at perhaps the speed we wanted it to, but learning happened. And I know school districts are taking stock of where kids are, and as they always have, they're meeting kids where they are. But we have to look at the bigger picture also when it comes to learning. I mean, mental health is a big issue, as it was before the pandemic. Our schools are meeting kids where they are and addressing all of their needs so that they can learn at the rates that we expect them to. I mean, we have to meet other needs before we can assume kids are going to learn most fully. And I mean, there's also technological divides. You know, we have to address that as well. I mean, the schools that were better positioned to serve kids virtually, when you think about the schools that had one-to-one computer technology where kids were taking those home, where you had mental health supports or adequate numbers of social workers and counselors in your schools, or partnerships with mental health in your community. You know, those are the things that we know that are going to help kids learn. And so the schools that don't have those things, those kids are not going to be learning at the same high rates. And it, unfortunately, it has a lot to do with socioeconomics too, right? So again, mental health is a big issue, excuse me, as it was before the pandemic, the technological divides. We also have facility differences. I mean, we shouldn't put all of this on our kids and on our teachers, because there are structural things that we need to address so that our students can become successful adults. And again, we need to remember that this is a pandemic. Our kids are surviving just like the rest of us, and we need to give everyone some grace.
We are talking about back to school with the head of Wisconsin's Department of Public Instruction, State Superintendent Jill Underley, and we're taking your calls right now at 800-642-1234. Because we were just talking about sort of the socioeconomic breakdowns between school districts, I want to really quickly ask you about the state budget. You know, it was much different than maybe Democrats in the legislature wanted. Governor Evers signed it, but he did call on more education funding. You know, what is your response to, I guess, the funding that schools have now versus what the governor is calling for?
Yeah, I think our community members need to be prepared, because in a couple of years, when we are looking at our next biennial budget, we're going to have a funding cliff, because what we experienced is no increase in state funding for our schools. We were told use all the federal dollars that you received, but those federal dollars were really one-time grants for all intents and purposes to address COVID. Meanwhile, I mean, costs increase. You know, you've got inflation, you've got also salaries, you've got utilities. I mean, there's a lot of other things that we need to address, plus, you know, the regular maintenance on your school buildings. So it wasn't what we hoped for. I mean, we've been doing more with less for the past 10 years. We really need to look at how we fund our schools, because the burden is increasing upon our local communities, and it's just exacerbating inequities when it comes to funding.
So I want to switch gears just a little bit, but kind of stick with that theme, because we talk a lot about the resources that kids need. And one of the resources that we frequently hear about is food, making sure kids are fed. And the Waukesha School District recently made national headlines for opting out of a federal meals program. You know, the Department of Public Instruction says that Waukesha is the only state school district to opt out. They got a lot of criticism for that. They're going to reevaluate that. But what is your reaction to how this story has developed over the last few days?
Yeah, I thought that was very interesting. The thing is, it's like, again, going back to what do kids need, right? What do kids need to thrive? And the whole point of public school is to provide that even playing field, right? So that everybody gets the best opportunity. And that's why we provide services in our school for special education or gifted and talented or mental health. I mean, technology. I mean, there's certain things that you can get in school that you can't get out of school. And food is one of those. And kids need breakfast and lunch. And our school lunch programs and school breakfast programs are incredible. I mean, they are so good. And the other piece of it is there's so much stigma, of course, attached to that, you know, for people who maybe were on free and reduced lunch, and schools have eliminated that stigma. And I think, you know, by providing the meals to all kids this year, as the U.S. Department of Agriculture has, I think that also takes steps at eliminating the stigma, but also ensuring that every child has what they need to succeed every day.
Let's talk about school board resignations. You know, in Minnesota, the Star Tribune has documented that there have been a lot of early retirements on school boards. And then recently, three members of Oconomowoc's school board resigned over disagreements. How concerning is this for you, you know, in your current role?
Yeah, it's very concerning because, again, schools didn't cause this, right? Schools did not cause the pandemic. I feel people are misplacing their anger. And again, it's really difficult because we have so many shortages already. You know, teachers become administrators, involved parents and community members become school board members. We need that leadership in our communities. And there's, you know, this vocal minority that is really working hard to undermine our public school system. And if we don't right the ship on this, I mean, we're going to be really feeling the impacts of this for, you know, decades to come. So we really need to do what we can. Those of you who are so supportive of your schools, reach out, encourage, you know, send a note to your child's teacher, or send notes to your school board members, or your superintendents, just telling them that you appreciate their leadership right now during this tough time. Again, it's a pandemic. Nobody's done this before, and people are doing the best they can to look out for our kids and our communities.
Well, we'll have to leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us. State Superintendent for Public Instruction Jill Underley joined us this morning. This was the State Capitol Report. I'm Jay Carlisle Larson. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network.